You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
And there's Kane! And England reach out! A vast national embrace! Harry Kane at last!
Alexander Zinchenko now. Oh, to fire it in! To Artem Dovbyk, who surely sends Ukraine!
Chris, the last eight lineup is now complete.
Yes, England end a 55-year wait for a knockout win over rivals Germany. Their former goalkeeper David James joins us on the show.
It was also a historic night for Ukraine after that dramatic extra time winner knocks out Sweden.
We'll hear from Thomas Vermaelen and Jan Sommer too as we preview the quarterfinals at Euro 2020.
Welcome to the show, presented by Qatar Airways. Chris Parrott joins me, Rob Daly, as always, to discuss all things Euro 2020. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Rob.
And we're also joined today by European football expert Kevin Hatchard. Kev, hello.
Hi, guys. What a dramatic ending to one of the best rounds of tournament football in football history.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Chris, starting with Ukraine. Well, what a way to end the round of 16. A 121st-minute winner to get them a first-ever quarter-final at the tournament.
Fitting finale, right? As Kev's just mentioned, it's been an extraordinary last 16. And they have a new hero, arguably one of the biggest goals ever in the history of the Ukraine national football team. Artem Dovbyk, only in the squad, Rob, because Junior Moraes got injured. His first goal for Ukraine, he played less than 60 minutes of football for his country before he came on. And then Alexander Zinchenko whipped in a brilliant ball in Glasgow and he headed it home. And they were a long way from home. The celebrations in Ukraine as that goal went in well past midnight in that part of the world, I am sure it's very, very loud. And they are through, as you said, to the last eight of a Euro for the very first time. Massive congratulations.
Okay, so we now know our quarterfinals for Friday and Saturday, and some of the big boys are gone.
The entire so-called group of death out.
All of them.
Germany, Portugal, France, and of course Hungary, who were unlucky to exit in the group stage. And there are some countries who probably internally hoped to be in the quarterfinals. I'm thinking of the Czech Republic, Ukraine. It's absolutely wide open.
Certainly is. And Kev, Germany beaten by England at Wembley. We're going to get into that game, of course. But for Joachim Löw, their head coach, it ends an era 15 years, the longest serving men's international head coach in Europe.
He's done an extraordinary job. And obviously, his reign hasn't ended in the way that he wanted when you pair up this tournament and the World Cup. But it should never be forgotten the indelible mark he's made on German football, the way he's modernised the national team, some of the thrilling football they've played, some of the great players that he has developed. So even though it hasn't had quite the storybook ending he wanted, he's still done an unbelievable job.
More on that shortly. We want all your thoughts on social media using the hashtag Euroshow. Get in touch via Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. We're also asking you, and I suppose in honour of that late goal from Dovbyk, one of the best moments at Euro, your favourite goals. It's not necessarily the best goals, but your favourite goals of this tournament. And I'll give you some good examples we've had from listeners. James Clancy has gone for Modric's goal versus Scotland.
Yeah.
It was the most technically brilliant goal. Ball across his body, outside of the boot, onto the postage stamp of the goal. That's not a bad pick. And Hannah's gone for Paul Pogba versus Switzerland. Chris, what springs to mind for you?
Both those players out, by the way, despite playing brilliantly. Yeah. Do you know what? We're going to get into it, actually. But I have to say that the goal scored by Alexander Zinchenko to give Ukraine the lead against Sweden followed another outside of the boot pass from Yarmolenko. First time he hit it, and it was a tough technique, and he got enough power to beat Robin Olsen. Look, I think it's going to be very difficult to beat Patrick Schick for the goal of the tournament, but that was a real thing of beauty from Andrei Shevchenko's team.
We'll get Kev's later. Keep your messages coming in. Hashtag Euroshow. OK, let's start in London as England beat Germany for the first time in a knockout stage of a major tournament since 1966.
And now match 43 of 51, England-Germany, to make new memories. And there's Jack Grealish, and here's Luke Shaw, and there for England is number 10 again, Raheem Sterling, the moment, the man. Muller's through the middle here, it's Thomas Muller for Germany, and he's dragged it wide, and England are off the hook. And here's Grealish, and there's Kane, and England reach out, a Arsenal embrace Harry Kane at last. England, modern England, writes their own new history. This time at Wembley, the German giant was slain.
An extraordinary atmosphere at Wembley. Well, let's get some reaction to this historic result from a man who played against Germany in a knockout match. The former England and Liverpool goalkeeper, David James, joins us now. Thanks so much for coming on the show, David.
Oh, great to be on the show. I'll tell you what, great to be on the show because of why I'm on the show.
Absolutely. A win for England, David. How did that feel watching?
I thought it was excellent. And I have to say, when I saw the lineup, I totally got what Gareth was trying to do. And when I was covering the game for International Channel and just saying, yeah, this makes perfect sense. And I'm not sure how many England fans were feeling like the rest of the panellists, but they seemed to think that it was the wrong idea and we should go all out attack. And Gareth got it perfect. The team obviously knew what they were meant to do. The introduction of Jack Grealish. It was a fascinating watch. It had just about everything in it, the chances for both sides, but ultimately the most important thing was the win for England. So what a game.
More than 50 caps over, I think, a 13-year career with your national team, David. Can you talk us through those two Jordan Pickford saves as a former goalkeeper? They were both excellent, weren't they?
They were. I mean, Jordan's had a fantastic tournament so far. I mean, where he's been asked to save shots, he saved them, and some of them have been fantastic, as you said. I think the first one was the big save, given it was a one-on-one with Werner. Werner had gone through. He did everything right in the sense that he'd made himself big enough and got the block in. The second save, I would have expected him to make because it was above him, but it was hit with some ferocity, and it required the agility that Jordan's got in spadefuls. So, yeah, I mean, Jordan, just like everybody in that team, and the fact that Jordan hasn't had to make save after save is down to the defence as well. And I think the whole team, from today's performance, England defended literally from the front. And even where Muller was one-on-one, I think Kyle Walker, I'd love to know what speed he was doing, but I reckon with the Olympics coming up, I reckon he could have a busy summer.
It was incredible. He nearly got back
to
that.
Yeah, it was.
David, did I see you on TV the other day at the Croatia game in an old-school England shirt? Am I imagining that?
I did, didn't I?
Imagine he said no. No, that wasn't me.
No, I'm sure it was under a blazer or something, David. I'm sure I saw you on TV, but...
There's a few things. Yeah, that was from '96. It wasn't an actual tournament shirt, but it was one because I was in the shadow squad. So I managed to pick up a shirt. I'm not sure if it was. I can't remember. It's Tom Campbell's, I think. I wore that because I'm a fan. The sad thing is, I'm an ex-player, but I can't help being a fan. So I had to wear my England shirt, and the jacket was one that I wore when I met the England players a few weeks back.
Oh, wow.
So I've kind of described it as my lucky jacket. So whenever England are playing, I've got my jacket on. So, yeah, I'm probably the worst fan. I have to try and be serious when I come to do the punditry, but I genuinely, rather than just being a fan and speaking that way, I looked at today's performance. I looked at the England stadium with the lineup. And I understood what Gareth is trying to do, and it worked. So, you know, more of that, please.
And David, are you looking at the draw like a fan? Because I think a lot of England fans are now looking at their side of the draw as the more favourable one and are, in their minds, plotting a route to a Wembley final.
Yeah, well, I mean, as a fan, of course, you want to get to the final, but ultimately you want to win the tournament. And there isn't any... there will be some, depending on how the game goes, and if it was the final... it depends how the performance goes, but ultimately you only enter these competitions to win them. One thing I have seen and I've learned in time, I think Denmark a testament to that in this tournament, that you know their passion from an opposition side can out-trump class. These are issues that the England team, Gareth Southgate and everybody involved will have to tackle, plan for, prepare for, and ultimately overcome in order to be successful. But as a fan, yeah, I mean, you know, some of the best teams have gone out already, arguably. So it's just about winning the next game and then seeing who you face, winning the next game, seeing how you face. It's like a repeating behaviour. But if England can get it right, just say three more games. You only need three more wins. I mean, if you offer someone three wins to win a trophy, then a wonderful position we're in.
Yeah, when you put it like that, it's true, isn't it? It's not that far off for anyone that's in the quarterfinals.
it was seven games at the beginning. Now yeah. It's down to three. So it's getting better.
So they're just over halfway. I like that. And just finally for me, David, there was a lot of talk, of course, before the game. It was England-Germany. It was that rivalry. You were, unfortunately, sorry to take you back to 2010, but you were part of a side that lost to Germany in a knockout stage match. Do you think this group of players now, well, they've kind of written their own history into this fixture, haven't they?
Well, Gareth set this out, and I go back to when I met the group of the players a few weeks ago, and we were talking about most of them weren't alive in 96. In 2010, we're talking 11 years ago, I mean, a lot of them were still kids. So as far as they're concerned, they would have known a lot of these German players who had played in 2010. They'd have grown up watching them, being football fans themselves, so they would have understood that. But I think when it comes to what they've been talking about this week, and I feel for Gareth a little bit, because the first question is, do you remember this?
Yeah.
And then when he said, no, we're forgetting about that, going on to what's happening now, then they'll bring something else up to remind him again. I think Gareth has handled it super well. I think the players, again, the way they've been talking, it's about them, what they're doing now. And, you know, it's going to be beautiful that the next time England meet Germany in a major tournament, we'll refer back to the time that we beat them, not the times that we lost to them. So they have created their own bit of history. But with three games to go, there is so much more they can do. And I'm just buzzing and waiting to see the next game.
David, I know you're sort of balancing this tightrope act of being a pundit and a fan, but and I'm asking you when you're in this mood, but who do you think is going to win Euro 2020?
It's a simple answer. England are European champions until someone beats them.
Oh, perfect. David, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of the tournament. Come on, England.
Former England and Liverpool goalkeeper David James in jubilant mood, I think it's fair to say. We'll hear from England's midfielder Declan Rice in a moment. But before that, let's catch up with captain Harry Kane, who's been speaking about scoring his first goal at Euro 2020.
I've always said as a striker, just be ready for the next one. Whenever it comes, it might be three games, might be five games, it might be in the next game I'll get another one. It's just part and parcel of the job, you know, and I've always backed myself to take chances when they come. Thankfully, Jack put a great ball in and I was there to nod it home. So, of course, as a striker, I love scoring goals. I want to be helping the team as much as possible. So it's nice to do that today.
When you walk out today and you see the stadium looks packed, even though it's 45,000, you know, you get that feeling, that fire inside your stomach that you want to go out there and perform. And we did that today. We left everything out there and that's in the end what got us the result. I think with games like this, it's always going to be a bit cagey. You know, it's the round of 16. Whoever loses goes out of the tournament. We was never going home today. In our minds, we was going out there and we was not coming off the pitch without a win. But now it's important we turn our focuses to Saturday and make sure we've recovered and we're prepared to go again. I feel like four clean sheets in a major tournament is outstanding. And to put the balls in the back of the net as well. People were talking about H not scoring. He's just come up with the best moment of probably my career to witness that. So yeah, we're fully focused. We're fully ready. And whatever comes, we're going to be ready to keep battling and fighting on.
Declan Rice there. Gareth Southgate also said, I've been at Wembley for full house games with England. I've never heard it so loud. An incredible atmosphere. Chris, the Germans out after that tricky group stage, of course.
Yeah, I mean, just about made it through, didn't they? And for them, I think, listening to Joachim Löw and Toni Kroos, really, they were speaking about how England were more clinical, and they weren't, because they had huge opportunities in the game, both at 0-0 and when they were 1-0 down. Löw saying that you don't get many chances in a game like this. Timo Werner and Thomas Müller had them. Unfortunately, they couldn't score, so it feels bad we're out. And Toni Kroos just saying, you can imagine how bitter this tastes. Kevin Hatchard, as well as being a European football expert, we know that German football is your speciality, really. And, you know, this was a pretty even game, right, from a German perspective, to lose it 2-0. That must be very disappointing, because they were well in it for so much of it.
It will really sting, because I thought they started well. I thought they played possession football, which has been one of the hallmarks of Joachim Löw's teams down the years. They looked comfortable. They settled more quickly, I thought, than England did. But you're absolutely right. It's about moments. You know, if Kai Havertz's brilliant volley isn't tipped over superbly by Jordan Pickford, it's a different game. If Pickford doesn't make an equally good save from Timo Werner, it's a different game. And Thomas Müller, who I think has played some of his best ever football in the last couple of years for Bayern München, normally in the Bundesliga, week in, week out, he puts that chance in the bottom corner. On this occasion, he didn't. And it's fine margins. And I think if you look at a couple of the performances in the group stage, this felt like it was better than those, but I just think England got it spot on. The wing-backs played ever so well. It was right for Gareth Southgate to change the system. Thought Luke Shaw on the left and Kieran Trippier on the right pretty much stopped Robin Gosens and Joshua Kimmich. And Raheem Sterling, for me, was the star player. Constantly looking for pockets of space, constantly trying to threaten him behind. He was fabulous.
I was a little surprised the Germans didn't kick on after that excellent opening 10 minutes where England did look very nervous. It was only until Bukayo Saka had a bit of a run down the other end that...
At
19-year-old. settled the nerves. That one-on-one, absolutely incredible moment when Thomas Müller dragged it wide off the post. 198 games in charge of the national team for Jurgi Löw, but they are out. And of course, there were nearly 42,000 fans at Wembley Stadium. And this was the noise of the supporters as the England players celebrated with them at full time. Hasn't it been great, Chris, at this tournament, just having fans back?
And remember, there was, 22,000, I think, around that in the group stage. This was the biggest attendance at Wembley for a football match for a number of years, and it's going to be bigger and even better for the semi-finals and for the final, whoever makes it there. But, you know, there's been a lot in this tournament. You think of the way the Czech Republic celebrated with their fans after the quarterfinal, some of the moments with the Danish supporters and their team. You know, there's something very special at the moment because fans haven't been in grounds, that when they get the opportunity to really celebrate a big goal, a big football victory, it's actually quite emotional. As well as being brilliant for those supporters, it's actually quite emotional. And England fans will be celebrating this for a number of days. And then, of course, looking forward to a huge quarterfinal.
And we're going to preview all of the last eight. Some fans, of course, couldn't make it to Wembley and they've been in the fan parks. And our reporter, Flo Lloyd-Hughes, has been speaking to a couple of them.
We're here with Ben and Patrick in the fan zone, Trafalgar Square. Just watch England beat Germany 2-0. Tell me how you're feeling, first of all.
I'm still shaking. I'm still shaking.
Incredible.
I couldn't tell you what happened between the first goal and the end of the game, actually.
How are you feeling about England's chances going forward and then the final? Oh, yeah. And you know what I'm going to ask next.
That was the tough game. After that, it's Sweden or Ukraine and then Denmark or Czech. Got to get to the final. And then France getting knocked out last night. We've got probably Belgium or Italy. Anything can happen in the final.
Yeah,
positive. Very positive now. I wasn't necessarily for the game, but...
I'm feeling like if we don't get through to the final, after beating Germany, our side of the draw, if we don't get through to the final, it's disappointing.
Expectations have just gone up a level for England as they make the quarterfinals, looking to reach the semi-finals for only the second time in their history. Okay, let's turn our attention to the other round of 16 match, which finished in unbelievable style as Sweden took on Ukraine in Glasgow.
He just hesitated and then he tries to pick the far. Zinchenko! Ukraine in front! Alexander Zinchenko! Support here from Forsberg. They do like to get players forward. It's deflected in! Emil Forsberg, big deflection, but Sweden level just before halftime. Yarmolenko, Yaremchuk waiting in the middle, pulls it back instead and off the post by Sidorchuk. He thought he'd scored. A little skipping run from Forsberg! Woodwork again for Emil Forsberg! And now we head for the extra 30 minutes at Hampden. There have been four red cards at this tournament so far. Make that five. Danielsson is off. He's saying, I won the ball. Alexander Zinchenko now. Oh, to fire it in! To Artem Dovbyk, who surely sends Ukraine into the quarterfinals. But this has been another night of drama. And Shevchenko leads Ukraine to the quarterfinals.
What a job he has done since taking over the Ukraine national team job. Kevin Hatchard, more brilliant drama in extra time in this tournament.
I love this game. I really did. I thought it was full of enterprising attacking play. I thought we saw two experienced playmakers strut their stuff in Yarmolenko for Ukraine and Forsberg for Sweden, and then late drama at the end. And I think, you know, some people had said, will there be a bit of fear creeping in because of how these teams have progressed to this stage and what it means to reach a quarterfinal? But not a bit of it. They really went for it. And I thought it was fitting that Oleksandr Zinchenko should actually set up the winning goal, because I thought he was great and he's so responsible. You could put him at left wing back, you can put him in midfield. That's why Pep Guardiola trusts him in the big games for Manchester City as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it was, what a way to further your legend, if that is possible, in terms of Andrei Shevchenko and Ukraine. Now, they have been to a FIFA World Cup quarterfinal in 2006 when another legendary figure in that country's footballing past, Oleg Blokhin, was in charge, one of the greatest players of his era. Well, Shevchenko has now done it himself at a Euro, and you could see what it meant to them at full time. The match winner had only come on in the 106th minute for Andrei Yarmolenko, who, again, was absolutely
great assist with that little outside of the boot clip.
Yeah. And you know, yeah, the red card helped, but it really felt like a game which was going to penalties. You know, the players were almost out on their feet, having given a lot, particularly in the 90 minutes when it really, really ebbed and flowed and was full of attacking football. But they came up with that moment, as Kev just said. Zinchenko's ball was excellent. The finish was great. And Ukraine, I wonder how many people tip them to be in the quarterfinals, but this has been a Euro of surprises, and now they're not going to be scared of anyone when they head to Rome.
And wasn't it the technicality of Sweden beating Poland?
Yes.
That meant that Ukraine qualified at all?
The only reason Ukraine were in this stage was because of Sweden, and now they have knocked Sweden out.
Our very own correspondent, Bogdan Buga, who's a regular on the show, seemed baffled before about the team selection.
Yes.
Malinovsky, one of the star players, surprisingly on the bench. But Bogdan has said this: Ukraine have equaled their biggest ever achievement at a major tournament, and no one can say they did not deserve it. Shevchenko's plans worked tonight, perhaps not ideally, but all his tactical decisions have proved true. The red card was big as well, wasn't it, Chris, obviously?
Yeah, it was. And absolutely the correct call as well. I was just thinking, as you read that, and you mentioned Shevchenko and Mauro Tassotti, both AC Milan legends, Ukraine head to Rome, of course, back to Italy, where really, apart from the great work that Shevchenko did at Dinamo Kiev as a player, that's really where he became a global superstar. So I just wonder whether some of those Italian fans who might have tickets might just think, we're going to support Ukraine in this one because of Andrei Shevchenko.
Absolutely. Well, there was a spell as well in that second half where Ukraine hit the post, Forsberg hit the post, and he hit the bar. And for Emil Forsberg, Kev, a player you see a lot of at RB Leipzig in the Bundesliga, I mean, he would have been in the running for the Golden Boot had he stayed in the tournament. What a brilliant couple of weeks he's had for Sweden.
Yeah, and I think it's underlined his importance to that team, because you want to translate your club football into international football. And he's absolutely done that. He is a joy to watch. There's such an effortlessness about what he does. I mean, he works ever so hard, but he makes everything look really easy. He glides along the pitch. He's able to go past people. Such an intelligent player. And somebody that has really had to battle back because he's had injury problems as well. He had a groin injury that he admitted was the scariest part of his career, because at the time, a couple of seasons ago, he had no idea how long it was going to be before he got back fully fit. So it's been superb to see him at his best.
And it's been great seeing the Swedes blend the experience of Forsberg and then the talent of some of these, you know, excellent young players who are really emerging now in Dejan Kulusevski and Alexander Isak. And I think Jan Andersson will look back on the red card in particular as really the turning point, because he had just made a triple substitution in extra time. He brought on Klaassen, Berg and Quaison, a very attacking change. He wanted to go and be on the front foot in extra time, and the red card to Marcus Danielsson stopped that happening. But I've just got one final stat, Rob, and it's I'm saying it to you because we were actually watching this together in Croatia.
Were we?
The goal from Artun Dovbik is the second latest goal ever in a Euro match after Semi Sentürk's goal for Turkey against Croatia.
Yeah.
But that only took the game to penalties. So his winner was the latest ever winner in a European Championship game.
Basically a diving header kind of thing. Just brilliant. Perfect. Brilliant drama. This is what Sujay Dutt, our Sweden reporter, said. Jana Andersson, their head coach, said that Sweden had come prepared for all scenarios. Did that include seeing a central defender sent off in extra time? Sweden eliminated in the round of 16. It means, Kev Hatchard, it's England versus Ukraine, and that game will be played late on Saturday in Rome. England, surely favourites for that one. How do you think this one's going to play out?
Yeah, England will be favourites, and I think that's correct. I think if you look at the solidity they've shown so far, the consistency they've shown, and they do have proven match winners. You know, Grealish came on and I thought was absolutely superb. I thought it was the right decision to use him as an impact sub rather than to start him. Raheem Sterling is playing possibly as well as he's ever played for England. But what I like about Ukraine is they're unpredictable. Mm. I mean, they've had performances even in games where if you look at them against the Dutch, they weren't great for big swathes of that. And then suddenly, bang, they've exploded into life and they're really difficult to contain. It's been great to see Yarmolenko play. I still think Malinovsky has a couple of gears to go. If you look at the way he finished the season for Atalanta, lots of goals, lots of assists. We haven't quite seen him as good as he can be. So if he plays to his maximum, England will have their hands full.
Okay, plenty more to come as we preview the rest of the Euro 2020 quarterfinals.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
I hope you're enjoying the show with me, Rob Daly, Chris Parrott and Kevin Hattinchard. Now, before we get into our quarterfinal preview, the round of 16 had a bit of everything, let's be honest, including some amazing goals. What do you make of this lot?
Damsgaard leaving it for Dolberg, looks for the chance to shoot, and he takes it, and finds the bottom corner. Could get worse for Wales here, and Mela makes it three, to cap an outstanding performance.
Shooting chance, oh, Torgan Hazard, what a thunderous goal for Belgium.
Almost sent it across, collected by Morata, who slams the ball high, into the roof of the net.
Benzema, 1-1. Karim Benzema, who came to France's rescue against Portugal. Is Pogba. Oh, that's wonderful. What a marvellous goal. Paul Pogba. Ivanovic. Would you believe it? 10 seconds of normal time remaining. Mario Gavranovic has equalised.
There's been some cracking goals in the knockouts and throughout the competition as a whole, and that's what we want you to get in touch about on social media, hashtag Euroshow on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Some great suggestions coming through. Eno's gone for a round of 16 goal. Torgan Hazard's wonder strike against Portugal. Nick, like many, has gone for Patrick Schick's goal. Nick says, it was struck from somewhere out in the North Atlantic. keep your messages coming in. Kev, we haven't done yours. Your favourite goal of Euro 2020 so far?
It was the last one we heard there, the Mario Gavranovic goal. And the reason I love that is because, A, it was great tenacity from the Swiss to win the ball back in midfield, then Granit Xhaka to play the pass. But for Gavranovic to come up with a finish so accurate, so cool, under just the most enormous pressure against the world champions with the game on the line, I thought was amazing that he did that.
There was an angle behind the goal where you see how far Hugo Lloris was from that shot, how accurate it was. And on top of the goals that we've seen, Patrick Schick has been mentioned a lot. He's in the running for the Golden Boot now, isn't he, Chris? He's not far behind Ronaldo, who's out of the competition.
Well, it's very interesting if you look. So Cristiano Ronaldo leads the way on 5, but he is out. Patrick Schick is one of 3 players on 4 goals, but Karim Benzema and Emil Forsberg are the other two, and they are also out. So Schick is the only one of the top 4 goal scorers to still be left in the competition. And behind him, you have the likes of Raheem Sterling and Romelu Lukaku on 3. So this is pretty wide open as well. It's been absolutely thrilling, the last 16. It's been incredibly unpredictable, and I think some new stars have emerged, and some of the guys that you thought were going to be the headline makers have actually ended up going home.
Keep your messages coming in, hashtag Euroshow. Chris, the quarterfinals then. Let's have our 4 matches and when they're being played as well.
Right, so it begins on Friday, the 2nd of July. And do you know the great thing about the quarterfinals is they are over 2 days, so we have 2 matches a day. How big are those going to be? So it starts on the 2nd of July when Switzerland play Spain in St. Petersburg, and later it is Belgium against Italy in Munich. And then on Saturday, the 3rd of July, it is to Baku for the Czech Republic against Denmark, and then to Rome for Ukraine, England.
Okay, well, let's start with that huge match in Germany, Belgium versus Italy. Let's hear from Thomas Vermaelen.
I mean, we'll go into their strengths, I think, the next couple of days. But yeah, they have some creative players up front. They can create chances. We've seen in the last games they played in the group phase, they scored some goals. So they have the creativity to score goals. So we have to be aware of that and make sure we can cope with that like we did against Portugal. Portugal has the same creativity, and we have to make sure we deal with that the same way against Italy.
Belgium defender Thomas Vermaelen, who fought his way into the first team, the starting 11 for the win over Portugal. Well, let's get more from the Belgium camp now. Reporter Elisa Saliou joins us. Hi, Elisa.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, first of all, it's the pressing question, really. The fitness of Kevin De Bruyne and Eden Hazard after the game the other day. What is the latest as you understand it with them?
Well, the coach has given us an update today. Unfortunately, it's still the same news as yesterday, that their chances of playing will be 50-50. Yeah, so not really clear on if they're going to be able to play or not. Yeah. Obviously, we all hope so, but yeah, we'll have to see. But Thorgan Hazard actually said that his brother is feeling a lot better since the game against Portugal. The medical staff have been taking exceptional care of him, so yeah, that's good news. But it's not certain yet if they're going to be able to play.
I love that. If you want the latest, go to his brother, not the coach or the medical staff. Elisa,
exactly.
Last time you were on, you told us about this, the Belgian pessimism. Surely now people are starting to be confident, right? Having just knocked out the holders?
Well, actually, as I said, Belgians are pessimists. Well, we had to ask ourselves, like, can we take on Portugal, the holders of the title? And now we have to ask ourselves, can we take on Italy, a very talented but extremely well-organized team? So the game against Portugal, the last 30 minutes was nail-biting. It was very intense. So I hope we can do it. And everybody in Belgium feels the same, but we're still cautious.
I was at the game, Elisa, in 2016 when Belgium were beaten by Italy 2-0. Italy were unbelievably solid, like you're saying, that day. What are your memories of that game? And does any kind of avenging that result come into this from a Belgian point of view?
Well, actually, no. I think the squad is looking at it with a fresh perspective. So obviously you learn things in those games that you lose. The games that you lose is the games where you learn the most. So there's a lot of experience that comes out of it. But I think everybody is looking at this game with fresh views. Every player in our squad has grown and evolved since then. So that's also something that we have to take into account. It's not the same young team we had back then. The team, it's almost, I think, 5 years later. So no, they've grown, and I don't think we can compare Belgium back then to Belgium now.
Within Belgium, Elisa, are they considered as favourites for this match, or are people backing Italy?
I think they are favourites, Chris, don't you? Would you have them as favourites?
Yeah, I think I would. Although De Bruyne and Eden Hazard's injury might make it 50-50, but in Belgium, are people expecting them to win?
Because that's the thing. Everybody's a little bit hesitant to see if De Bruyne and Hazard are going to be able to play, because they're, of course, a big portion of our team. They supply Lukaku with the ball to score, you know. So everybody's a bit hesitant to see if they're going to play. But we think, after seeing Italy against Austria and seeing Belgium against Portugal, it's given us some confidence.
And are you expecting many Belgians to try and make the trip to Munich for the game?
Yes. I've already seen on social media a lot of people arranging to make the trip. Some people are even already there.
That's very early. Good on them. Elisa, thank you very much for joining the show. It's been great to get your insight.
Thank you.
Elisa Saliou, who's in with the Belgium team. So they take on Italy. Kev Hatchard, a European football expert. How are Italy looking? Because they did have some injury issues, didn't they, going into the round of 16?
Yeah, it's a mixed picture, Rob. So you've got Alessandro Florenzi, the right back, who looks as though he's out. So you would think that Giovanni Di Lorenzo will deputise again. Better news at centre-back. Giorgio Chiellini, who has been out injured, has been back training with the team. They're going to assess him on a daily basis. The interesting thing, though, is that the guy who could deputise for him again, Francesco Acerbi, was quite bullish when he talked about dealing with Romelu Lukaku. He said, look, I've stopped him in Serie A before, so I'm confident I can stop him again. So that's going to be interesting because, of course, Italy and their players know Lukaku extremely well from the way that he's ripped up Serie A over the last couple of seasons.
Well, with more on that, and our man with the Italy team, Paolo Minicucci, joins us. Ciao, Paolo.
Hello, everybody.
Paolo, there's been a lot of laugh, particularly on social media, of the celebration between Mancini and Vialli during that game. And I saw Sampdoria doing a similar thing from when they played together. Has there been a lot of love for that in Italy as well, those two's relationship, and how important are they as a coaching duo?
Absolutely. That hug was main considered as the highlight of the tournament so far.
How was it? It's great. It was
beautiful to see, even considering the problem Vialli has had with his health.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic to see. It was also a trip in the memory line because Lane, when they played together with Sampdoria, with Cesc, was a team loved by everyone in Italy. Like in Italy, usually you love or hate a team, but Sampdoria was quite common, the second team for everyone, because it was a smaller team coming big, and everyone loved the partnership Vialli Mancini. So it was really, really beautiful to see that hug and that celebration. And it was I agree that was probably the highlight of the tournament so far.
Paolo, it's been great getting your insight on the show throughout the course of this tournament, because you're so in with the group, you're speaking to the players all the time, and it seems there's been a very jovial, happy mood amongst the players. They all seem to be good friends and get along very well. I wonder if now, if things are getting a little bit serious, are you noticing? Because I mean, this is their toughest test now, Belgium, in the quarterfinals. This is when stuff really seems to get serious for them.
The atmosphere is always the same, really joyful, and probably they start to get bored a bit because they're always in the camp. And I talked to Immobile today, and he said that I cannot walk anymore because I always expect a joke from Insigne, like hiding somewhere and jumping from the wardrobe or something.
He's the practical joker, is he, Paolo? Is he the one who winds up his teammates?
Insigne, yeah, because Immobile told me that he's never playing with video games or other stuff, but he's always trying to make jokes to everyone, to scare everyone. And so he started, after 20 days, 1 month, he started to get bored, so the jokes becomes more and more more often. And he said that I cannot walk calm anymore because I know that something is happening all the time.
You'd be on edge all
you
the time.
You would say, yeah. Lorenzo, please just calm
just
down.
Just leave me alone.
For one evening. A man that, of course, is going to attract a huge amount of headlines ahead of this game is going to be Romelu Lukaku, Paolo. Now, you've seen a lot of him in Serie A this season. Of course, most of that Italy squad are going to know all about him. Do you think there's going to be any special tactic to try and stop him?
Yesterday we talked to Acerbi that he has been replacing Chiellini when Chiellini was injured. He still has chance to play because I think that Chiellini will make it, but otherwise Acerbi will deputize. And he was really clear in saying that you cannot stop Lukaku with one man. You need to work as a team against him, because physically he's too strong. When he gets the ball, he defends it so well. He creates spaces for the other. He can run by himself. So the only solution is to work as a team against him, trying to cut sources like where the ball is, before the ball is arriving to him. So Jorginho, for example, will have to do a great job there in cutting passing towards Lukaku. Players always ready to help on the second ball, like when he's trying to pass to someone, like always ready to anticipate those passes.
Paolo, we asked Elisa before on Belgium whether they're considered favourites. Me and Chris, I think, are siding with Belgium being marginal favourites going into this. What do you think, Italy or Belgium?
This is a matter of heart against brain. Before the tournament, I say that Belgium was the favorite to win it. So I still think that they are among the favorites. They are a great team. I don't know if they will manage to deal with the recent injuries, De Bruyne, Hazard, if they will play or not. That is probably a blow for them, for sure. But I still think that they are among the candidates to go all the way, and so I consider them slightly favourite against Italy as well.
Paolo, great to hear from you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Speak to you soon.
UEFA's Italy correspondent Paolo Minicucci. I don't believe him. I think he thinks Italy are going to win.
Of course he does.
We'll wait and catch up with him, I'm sure, later on another edition of the show. Well, that is the second quarterfinal. It's the late kickoff on Friday, the 2nd of July at 2100 CEST. 3 hours before that in St. Petersburg, Switzerland take on Spain after both teams were involved in what we're now calling Magic Monday.
Dovanovic, would you believe it? 10 seconds of normal time remaining. Mario Gavranovic has equalised. Can Mbappe deliver? He's denied by Sama. And Switzerland have done it against all the odds.
Almost sent it across. Collected by Morata.
What a goal.
Who slams the ball high into the roof of the net. There's a real chance here. And it's in the back of the net. And Spain surely will do it now at 5-3.
Well, it's great to relive some of that drama from the other day. What a brilliant day's action. Let's hear from Switzerland's penalty hero, goalkeeper Jan Sommer, who believes they can win in every match they play.
Anything is possible, but it's always anything is possible, always in football. And we believed it. We said before the team, before the game, that we are a small country, yes, but we have a lot of quality, and we had a lot of experience in our squad, and we showed it.
Jan Sommer there, another hero from the Granit Xhaka, will be suspended for the game against Spain. It's a big loss, but it's their first ever Euro knockout win that sees them into the quarterfinals. We heard from Sommer there, Kev, and it is a team littered with Bundesliga talent that's, in part, playing at that level has helped get them into the last eight of this tournament.
Yeah, they have been together a long time. Vladimir Petkovic has been their coach for a long time. I'm really pleased for Sommer. He's one of those guys, those people who are just really good at everything. So he's got a cookery blog, he plays the guitar, he's a really good photographer, and he's a world-class goalkeeper. And he's very nice as well.
So he's got it all.
Even be annoyed.
He's got it all.
You can't even be annoyed about it. So... But I'm still picking my jaw up off the floor after what they did against France to show the grit and determination, but also the quality to actually come back and force the world champions to extra time and penalties was just a monumental achievement. And they will really believe, having kind of broken that last 16 curse, if you like, they'll really feel that they can take Spain on.
Yeah, they will. Remember, Spain were involved in that 8th-goal match, which was even more ridiculous in many ways against Croatia. So let's get their perspective. How are they feeling? We can go to our man within the Spain cap, the brilliant Graham Hunter. Thanks for coming on the show.
I think I should thank you, because I'd like to present this as a formal letter of complaint to La Roja, because honestly, you have to, everything in life is about equilibrium. And yes, my serotonin and my endorphin levels went up, but your blood pressure doesn't need a finish like that. So I'm on the show because if you want to talk football, then you've got the right person. But we could just get this in my podcast and send it off to Unai Simón and Luis Enrique and say, lads, okay, that's fine this time, but no more of that tension. Thank you very much.
So Graham, I was going to ask, okay, I think you've covered Spain at major tournaments since the World Cup in 2006, right? Where does this rank in terms of crazy, thrilling, whatever descriptive words you want to choose about that 5-3 win over Croatia? Where does that rank in all the games you've watched?
Yeah, it's apples and oranges, because in everything, in all the emotions that football has ever given me, that moment when Iker Casillas uses the small toe of his right foot to tip the ball round the post from Arjen Robben, the world stopped for me. I couldn't breathe for a second or two. I couldn't believe what I'd seen. And if you compare that to last night, that one in its own right is the most crazy, the most enjoyable, the least defensible performance of all of them. And it gave me an adrenaline rush, because I don't simply like these people that I get to work with. And we met and interviewed all the goal scorers in this tournament. But beyond that, I like how they play football. I like what their entire mentality about the game that we love. Heaps of kudos, masses of enjoyment. Yes, it lists up there utter around the top. My number one tense, my goodness, how did that happen? Combination is Iker saving from Robin and Iniesta scoring past Stekelenburg. But that's in at number two, so it's on the podium, silver medal.
It will take that, I think.
And moving on to Switzerland now. Of course, Spain and Switzerland were in the same UEFA Nations League group, right, not so long ago. Two very, very close matches. What's the sense in Spain? Of course, many people might have been thinking it was going to be France, but it is Switzerland. What is the view in Spain now ahead of this huge quarterfinal?
What I have to like about Switzerland, their players and their coaches, that they understand exactly how to frustrate Spain. And that's not something we've seen a lot of in this tournament. Teams haven't said, I know your weaknesses, I know our strengths, we're going to try and stop you playing. Largely across the tournament, the reason that the goal total, but also the thrills and the skills are en route to making this potentially the best Euro ever, is that everybody said, I know. Across the tournament, 90% of the time, the teams are saying, I know our skills, and we're going to impose them on you. We're going to take the game to you. Now, if Switzerland do that, then we'll have a barnstormer of a game. It wasn't the way they played the last two matches against Spain. They came so close to getting maybe a draw and a win rather than a draw and a defeat. So I don't expect a big change from the tactical ideas of the Nations League. But you asked me to put myself in the heads of the Spain group. I'll tell you this. You could have said to me there, any of the teams are the quarterfinal. It could have been England at Wembley. It could have been Italy with a full-strength squad. It could have been Germany, who they beat 6-0 in November in the Nations League. Right now, there is no team in the world that this Spain side was, oof, I wish we could have avoided them, or I don't like what they could do to us. They are not perfect. They are not fully cooked yet. There are problems in the second half when it went back to two left-footed defenders when Eric Garcia went off and Laporte went to right centre-back and Pau came on. Pau immediately gave a beautiful assist to Ferran Torres, but defensively, it didn't look right again. There are problems. There are spaces for Switzerland to take advantage. But this group and this manager literally think, on our day, if we take our chances, we can beat anybody. So no fear is my answer to you, no fear.
Very interesting. Well, let's hope it is half as good as both these sides' last 16 matches. Graham, thank you very much for coming on the programme again.
Pleasure, lads, and I can only finish by saying viva Spain.
Always good to hear Graham Hunter, UEFA's Spain reporter, looking ahead to this huge quarterfinal. Cannot wait for this, Rob.
OK, on Saturday, there's a couple, of course. We've already mentioned England, Ukraine. How about we get into the Czech Republic versus Denmark? Kev, we'll get into the team news shortly, but who are your favourites going to this? I'm inclined to go Denmark. I've just got such a good feeling about them in the minute.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think they have got real momentum. They've obviously developed that incredible connection with their fans, with the home games that they play, but that was also evident when they played subsequent games, you know, in Amsterdam. They were so good against Wales. And I just feel like Kasper Hjulmand, the coach, who had a spell in Germany that didn't quite work out, and there's been a lot of soul-searching in Germany about why that didn't work out, but he's been terrific. A real leader of men. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it's absolutely true. You've had players all over the pitch who've really put their hands up and taken responsibility. Joachim Mähler, I've loved his performances. He has been sensational. Damsgaard's been great, but they've really felt like a team. And we went into this tournament talking about the spine of the team, and I think that's absolutely still true. Great goalkeeper, really solid defence, and some players at the top end of the pitch who can do great damage to the opponent.
Yeah, they'll be hoping that Simon Kjær can play, Rob. He is a bit of a doubt with a knock, but Hjulmand was saying that it's going to take a lot to hold him back and not play in a quarter-final. Yusuf Poulsen, still a problem with his thigh, so whether Kasper Dolberg keeps his place up front, we shall see. And Daniel Vass is apparently still recovering. And just one little stat which I really like, given they're playing the Czech Republic and Ukraine play on Saturday as well, is that, you know, three of the four best third-place teams went through. The only one who didn't was Portugal, the holders of Euro. So
who won it as a third-place team in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how things work out, right?
It's been an incredible tournament so far. Kev, what are your thoughts on the Czech Republic? They've beaten Scotland, they drew a Croatia, lost to England, then, of course, had that brilliant win over the Netherlands.
I think that win will have given them great belief, because they came into the tournament, I felt, as a team that we knew was solid, but a lot was going to depend on whether Patrick Schick in attack could bring his A game. Well, he's absolutely done that. I mean, he has properly fulfilled his potential. We knew he had talent, but at club level with Bayer Leverkusen, he would admit himself, he has been a little bit in and out, but that consistency has been there. I think Thomas Soucek's been great and very selfless in midfield. His instincts are always to go forward, but he's actually played a more defensive role at times. Holesch out of position in midfield has been great too.
Kev, thank you very much for your insight. Much appreciated.
Cheers, guys.
And Chris, your pick of the quarterfinals?
Has to be Belgium, Italy. I think the winner of that will be the favourite going into the semi-finals.
Chris, thanks for your company. Remember to listen to the Euro Show live every match night on the official app or on Euro2020.com. You can also subscribe to the official podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows. We'll be back with our live show on Friday to react to Belgium, Italy, and Switzerland versus Spain. And the podcast will be released shortly afterwards. Thank you very much for joining us as always, and we'll see you in the quarterfinals.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.